Oh, man, it's 6 p.m., and that means it's time for the Bullpen, starring the one and only Joe George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
Listen and be fascinated as the longtime producer becomes untethered by lesser talent and can truly talk sports the way he was meant to, with no reins or restrictions, with stellar takes and perfect diction.
I'm assistant regional manager. I should know first.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, okay.
Now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen with Joe George.
Welcome in to the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. You guys are welcome into the show, 713-780-3776. That's the text line, the HRMP listener line, twitch.tv/ESPN975. And, of course, now on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Brian McDonald, alongside me, returns from a week away, was doing other business. The BMAC is back. You can find him on Twitter, at SackByBMAC. And we got a lot to talk about today. The Super Bowl was yesterday. The Kansas City Chiefs beat the 49ers 25-22. A very good game. I heard Andrew talking about this earlier today. They were doing Connor and Beer was doing their three up and three down. And Andrew was talking about how, you know, we're about the same age, Andrew and I. He's like 2 or 3 years younger than me. And he was talking about how, you know, in his lifetime, for the most part, there's been pretty good Super Bowls. And it's so funny because last night, like on Twitter, and I don't know if this is what like brought this idea to him, but I saw that on last night on Twitter, like all these older generations talking about how the Super Bowl like was kind of boring for a while.
Oh, it was. I mean,
and you're not that much older than us.
No, like, I mean, I'm 40. You're what, 31?
Yeah, 32.
Oh, 32. So that's not I don't think that's a different generation. I think it would have to be at least 10 years.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
But close enough. But yeah, like growing up as a kid in the 90s, the Super Bowl sucked every single year. Like,
exactly.
It was constantly blowouts. I mean, like, probably the best game would have been, I don't know, Packers-Broncos. Like, what was that, 97?
Mm-hmm.
But pretty much every Super Bowl other than, like, the first Super Bowl I remember watching was Washington versus Buffalo. And pretty much from that point until really Brady got into the game, other than that Packer-Broncos Super Bowl, all of them sucked.
Yeah, I mean, the first Super Bowl I remember like vividly was Rams Titans. Obviously great ending.
Yeah, it was a great game.
And Andrew's right. Like for the most part, I think the worst Super Bowl I've ever watched was I was actually with Jeremy Branham and Josh Beard at Beard's house for the Rams Patriots game with Jared Goff.
10-3,
that
wasn't
game
it?
Sucked.
Yeah, that game.
And
it was close at least because it's a different type of suck. Because growing up, what we were dealing with, you know, as kids in the 90s was things where like the Cowboys putting 55 on the Bills. And the 49ers beating the Chargers by like 30. Those were the type of games we were getting back then. But different type of game with Rams and Patriots. But certainly that game was pretty boring.
Yeah, but like last night was a great game. You know, I mean, it was it's kind of a wild.
Now,
game.
Like, I'm interested to know, are you saying that for the entire game? Because I saw a lot of people before the game turned on its head in the second half. People were complaining a lot on Twitter. Oh, this game's terrible all throughout the first half.
I mean, it wasn't like a well-executed football game. Like, the amount of fumbles that happened yesterday, like, blows. I can't imagine that, like, the Vegas over-under for total fumbles in the game was more than, like, 1.5. And there was probably, like, 6 in the game. I thought the game was very good. Like, I thought watching this game, like, it was a good football game. Like, you had offensive movement on both sides, but then you had defenses stepping up. You had big, you know, turnover moments, big shocking moments in the game. Like, it wasn't, yeah, of course, like 40-42 would be way more fun and entertaining, more the high scoring. But I thought it was a good football game. Like, I felt entertained pretty much the entire game.
Yeah, that's where I was at. I mean, like, it wasn't the offense. It certainly wasn't an offensive masterpiece in the first half. But I can be entertained by things other than touchdowns. I thought there was a lot of good moments in the game even before the scoring turned up in the second half.
Yeah, so I thought it was a good game. And there was a lot on the line last night. Like, the Mahomes dynasty, can he pass Brady? We had that discussion on the Bees earlier. I think like we're all pretty, like the three of us were pretty consensus that, you know, he has to get to 8 to really even just to be in the conversation. Like, Mahomes has to win 8 Super Bowls to pass Brady.
I don't think it's going to take 7.
Why?
Recency bias. There's going to be, because by the time Mahomes gets to, let's say, six, mm-hmm. we're talking probably best case, what, like say three more, probably 5 years from now. There's going to be a lot of people that, you know, came in with Brady at the very end.
Sure.
By 5 years from now, aren't going to have the same memory of Brady in his prime. And the recency bias, same way people do with LeBron, even though he has fewer titles than Michael Jordan, there's still a loud faction of people who will claim LeBron over Jordan, even though he has fewer titles because of recency bias. And so I think that would play in Mahomes' favor.
Yeah, I think there definitely will be people like it's, and there's people out there now. Like, I'm sure Nick Wright went and spouted his mouth off on television today, saying how Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback of all time. Now, I think he is already, like, in terms of passer and like quarterback itself,
raw talent for
but
sure.
Like legacy, GOAT status. He, I think you have to pass people in championships to get there. Like, yes, Michael Jordan has not had more championships than Bill Russell. The thing is, it's Michael Jordan, the player, was way better than Bill Russell, the player. I'm guessing, I don't know, I'm 32, but like most people would agree with me that are even basketball historians. So like Michael Jordan is the GOAT. And then with that, to me, to pass it, even though, like Patrick Mahomes, I think LeBron James was a better basketball player than Michael Jordan. You can't be the GOAT unless you have more championships. So I think Mahomes has to accomplish that. Now, for me, I kind of lean towards like almost needing two more, because I do value the 2019 AFC Championship game in which the Patriots and Tom Brady beat Mahomes, and then the Super Bowl, 2 years later, when the Buccaneers and Tom Brady beat Mahomes. Even Mahomes recognized that last night.
Yeah, Brady's 2-0 against him in the playoffs.
Yeah, like in the two biggest games they played in, Brady won. They're 3-3 overall, but in the two games that mattered the most. So like, I think if Mahomes gets to 8, he can get there. But my gosh, we are so far away from that. I'm more intrigued by, with this Mahomes conversation, of can they be the first team in NFL history to three-peat? Because I saw the odds immediately. These were out there. We talked about this 2 weeks ago when the Texans season ended, that the Texans were plus 2,500 favorites to win the Super Bowl, which was the 11th best odds in the NFL. At that time, the 49ers were number one at plus 550. Even after last night's game, they're still the betting favorite to win the Super Bowl next year. I get why. It's because they play in the NFC and not the AFC. There's no CJ Stroud, Justin Herbert,
Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson.
Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson. Like, hell, I mean, like, there's all these great quarterbacks in one conference, none in the NFC. So that's why, to me, the 49ers are the favorite. But I'm way more intrigued by that. Like, can they chase something that Brady never accomplished? Because that will help Mahomes' legacy quite a bit if he wins a third Super Bowl in a row. And I'll say this. I think my answer is yes. Like, I'm going to...
Oh, you would put the bet down now?
Yeah. Like, I kind of want to see, like, Chris Jones leaving free agency and see if
that's the difficult part to answer. Because, yeah. I mean, look, part of it was sickening watching, like, Patrick Mahomes wins a Super Bowl, he throws two touchdown passes, and they're to Mecole Hardman in MPS. I mean, in the season, obviously it didn't even matter last year that they lost Tyreek Hill, but it went beyond not just having Tyreek Hill in this game. He threw touchdown and won the game throwing touchdowns to the two guys that were costing them games earlier in the season.
I mean, the first guy wasn't even on the team.
Yeah, that's right. He was on the Jets.
They traded Mecole Hardman to the Jets in the offseason. The Jets cut him. They brought him back, and he caught the game-winning touchdown.
So, on one hand, you want to say, well, let's see what happens with Chris Jones, and I'm sure they have some other important free agents as well.
They'll figure it out.
But on the other hand, he just won a Super Bowl throwing touchdown passes to Mecole Hardman in MVS. So it almost doesn't matter what's put around them. And it does, as you bring up the idea of the first ever three-peat in NFL history, I was not rooting for the Chiefs last night. I didn't have a rooting interest either way, but I just kind of tired of seeing the same team win.
No, but for sure.
But I do think next year, unless it's obviously, there wouldn't be a rooting interest because the Texans couldn't be playing them in the Super Bowl. But unless there's some other reason to root against the Chiefs, I do think I'd be rooting for the Chiefs in next year's Super Bowl if they were to make it, just so I could see history.
For sure. Now, I was talking about this with Joel and Jeremy in one of the breaks earlier. One of the things I'm so kind of fascinated by with the Chiefs, like, they don't have the hate yet. It's not there. The vitriol.
Define it.
Like, that the Astros faced, that the Patriots faced.
Well,
two cheaters.
I was about to say, you probably, yeah, there's a clear part of me, sure, asterisk there as the reason why.
But like LeBron has it. Like a lot of these legacy teams, when they have so much success, like there is just pure hatred. And I don't know what it is about Mahomes and the Chiefs, but they seem to be avoiding it a little bit.
I think there's the Well, you brought up specifically LeBron.
It's the cheeseburgers.
Well, that's part. Well, sure.
It's the Andy Reid cheeseburgers. It's,
well, that definitely helps. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but Chris Berman gave him some In-N-Out burgers.
Yeah, he said he could smell the onions.
Yeah, exactly.
Very funny.
But no, I think part of it is, and you brought up specifically LeBron. LeBron was shoved on us as a sports watching country
constantly
at what, age 17, when he was on the SI cover as the chosen one. And I think that's the big difference. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, obviously first round pick, but coming out of Texas Tech, he had losing seasons there at Texas Tech. He was not thought of as this can't miss prospect, even being picked in 10th overall by the Chiefs. Andy Reid obviously was viewed for a long time as basically what Kyle Shanahan is now, as the great offensive mind who can't get over the hump. And Travis Kelce, while he was also, a second-round pick? I think a second-round pick. He wasn't the Rob Gronkowski that was just burst on the scene right away and was this amazing, over-the-top, character. So I think they got to the title before they were forced upon us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and even then, they're not, in terms of, Sunday night, Monday night football games, Thursday night, I don't feel like we're watching the Chiefs every week.
No.
When in reality,
and
it's
partly
be.
Because it's Kansas City. It's flyover country.
Yeah, and we're with New England. It's they were in prime time every single week. It felt like it didn't matter who they were playing. They were always there. They were they're always shoved in our face. The hate is still there. It's just not to the level that typically a team with success has. I do think part of it is the cheating stuff, and the corniness that I think Brady and LeBron kind of share.
It's just what's forced upon you, because Brady wasn't hated during the first three-peat.
No, it was
Brady
it was
hated
the later
until
run.
Later.
Yeah, and that's
what causes the hate. Like the idea, I'll relate it to wrestling. When before Roman Reigns turned into a heel in 2020, when he was forced upon us as the babyface, people hated him.
Most disliked video in WWE history. 400,000 likes.
People hate The Rock. Yeah, because it comes off as people trying to tell you what to like, and that's what it felt like with LeBron, where it didn't feel like that way with the Chiefs, because Mahomes had to come from further away to get there.
All right, he is Brian McDonald, producing the show tonight. I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. We'll continue this conversation a little bit. Last night's game, it was a good one. Kyle Shanahan, is he a full-on choke artist? We got a fun question to end the show today. I'm going to try to put people's brains in a blender. Who do you trust more to win a championship, Kyle Shanahan, Doc Rivers, or Dave Roberts? We'll do that to end the show, but we'll talk about the overtime change, what we saw last night, and then, this question. How do the Texans dethrone the Chiefs? Which team is set up best for the future in the NFL to do that? That's next year on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
After a full day's work of producing and corralling all of the individual conflicting personalities at ESPN 97.5, well, if you're jumping Joe George, you do another hour of sports talk. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen.
Joe George here with you till 7 o'clock. No Buzz Williams show tonight. They're off. They'll have an A&M basketball tomorrow starting at 5:30, so Killer Bees will only be 2.5 hours tomorrow. I'll be hanging out from 12 to 3. With Josh Beard tomorrow, Michael Connor will be out, so I'll be here then with you guys as well. But, the overtime rules. Patrick Mahomes was just on ESPN within the last hour and just reaffirmed once again that the Kansas City Chiefs' plan, win the toss or not, was to kick the ball. Obviously, unless the 49ers won the toss and chose to do it. But their plan was to take the ball second, and if Kansas City or San Francisco had scored a touchdown, Kansas City was going to score their own touchdown and go for two. Patrick Mahomes said, I'm not sure Coach Reid really wants you telling me this, but that's what we were going to do.
I'll just to jump in real quick. Andy Reid said last night with Chris Berman, had they won the toss, they would have kicked off.
Yeah, and I think it's
100%. That's what they were going to do.
Yeah. Now, I think Kyle Shanahan, the backlash he's getting for this is a little extreme. Because, like, I get both sides of the argument. Like, I get the idea of, look, we're going to take the ball. We're going to score.
Well, sell me on the idea of getting the ball or taking the ball, because I don't get the strategy in that. If you're saying you see both sides, yeah. I don't see that side. So sell me on it.
So because you get the ball, you kick a field goal, you stop them to a field goal, you get the ball one more time, then it's back to sudden death. You punt the ball, they punt the ball, you get the ball back, it's sudden death. So, like, in theory...
So you could get the ball first at, when it becomes
sudden death. When it becomes sudden death, okay. Then you get the ball. Now, you still have to score or make sure the other team only matches what you do.
But I see that point, yeah. Like, you're getting the ball first when it becomes sudden death, and then at that point, obviously, you need less. But you're still taking into... you're risking way more variables playing it that way.
For sure. Now, I like Andy Reid's strategy. I like the fact
it's the same. I equated it last night on Twitter. It's the same way... Because I think it's been universal that what you do in college football in overtime is you always take the ball second because mm-hmm. you want to know exactly what you need. And now with this new rule, basically putting teams in the same situation, I know they don't format it because they don't do the thing from the 25-yard line or whatever, or the forced two-point conversions. But it's basically the same. The mindset to me is basically the same. You want the ball second so you know what you need.
Yeah, even though, but in college football, that next one's not sudden death. It's not because, like, the other team, you can keep going back and forth.
But it
forever.
Still creates a similar situation.
No,
where
for sure.
If you get the ball first and you're settling for the field goal, you're kind of put in the spot of, like, well, should I be going for and a fourth?
Yeah.
Whereas that second team doesn't have to have that back and forth in their mind, like, should I go for it? Should I not? They know exactly what they need.
Yeah. And I definitely see both sides. Like, now I think my strategy, if I was an NFL coach, like, my strategy would honestly depend on who my quarterback is. Like, it's not just about – because I think the going for two is also the right move. Like, if I'm the Chiefs –
Oh, 100%.
Like, if the 49ers score a touchdown, I think the win probability in that moment is better than – it's probably, what, 50-50 to get a two-point conversion from the two-yard line? Like, versus giving Brock Purdy and Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk the ball back, or even just having to do a kickoff. Like, you could have a Devin Hester moment and the game's over and your defense never even gets back on the field. So – I like the idea of getting it and going for two, but if Brock Purdy's my quarterback, I would rather trust my defense, even though it's Mahomes, and say most teams are not going to go for two like that. Like, I don't think most teams would handle it the way the Chiefs are talking about. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think it's less true in today's game. Like, certainly 20 years ago, you would have been right. But, I mean, I'm blinking
Dan
on
Campbell.
Dan Campbell. Yeah, certainly Dan Campbell would have gone for it. I think Sean McVay, I would guess, would have gone for it.
Yeah.
I mean, even a defensive coach like D'Amico Ryans, I think, showed, you know, at times that he would probably lend himself to the idea of going for two in that situation.
For sure.
It's exactly what you said. You're putting all your chips in either the bucket of one play from the 3-yard line, or we have to get a stop and get the ball back and score again. It's just, again, you're just introducing way more variables
yeah.
on the other side that's viewed as, like, the traditional mindset than you are for going for two.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, in the long term, because obviously this is the first time that these rules have been played out in front of us since they've been implemented. So I'm curious what happens the next, like, 3 or 4 times, because – in this moment, all we have is the word of the Kansas City Chiefs that they would have taken the ball. I mean, I believe them. But I'm curious what the other teams will do that win the toss. If they'll take the Shanahan or Andy Reid approach.
I think this is going to help teams play it
for sure
more correctly because they saw it play out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's how I would lean, too. Like,
Because the mindset forever and ever and ever in the NFL was you always take the ball first. You always take the ball first. Hell, who was the Lions coach that we've mocked for, you know, 2 decades now? But when he took the I think he took the wind in an overtime game or something like that. So the mindset always, you know, for basically the entire history of the NFL, when you get to overtime, you always take the ball first because, you know, growing up, it was sudden death. And then it still became where if you score a touchdown first, it became sudden death. So I think that mindset is still needing to be overcame for a lot of these coaches. But now seeing it play out in this dramatic way with the Chiefs, I think is going to help, you know, click that in their head and think, oh, this is more like college football overtime rules. It's more advantageous to take the ball second.
Yeah, 1586 points out what we haven't yet, which is part of the obvious, is that the first team has one less down. Because, yeah, like the Kansas City
Chiefs. Yeah, that's what I was pointing out before about, like, do we go for it on fourth down or not?
Yeah, like they, like you play a conservative. You know, if you're the 49ers and if you have a third and six, you're just going to punt the ball.
Right.
Or you're going to kick the field goal. Where the Chiefs, because like you said, they know what they have to do. They just, you just keep going for it. And like you just have four opportunities to get every single first
down. And it almost feels like you have two extra downs because that third down becomes different.
Exactly.
Like if you're taking the ball second and you know you have two downs, you're going to treat third down differently than you would if you think you might have to punt.
Yeah, so I see the kind of the Shanahan side of being more conservative. I wouldn't want the Houston Texans or the Chicago Bears to play that way if they were in a playoff moment like this. I would rather take the ball second and you have everything you need to know in front of you. And I love the idea of going for two. Like because I would rather have my destiny in my offense's hands than in the other teams. Like the fact that it's going to be sudden death, you make it sudden death in that moment by going for two. And plus, we know in the NFL, the field goal stuff is not any sure thing. I mean, we saw it yesterday. The field goal, if that extra point doesn't get blocked, the 49ers and Brock Purdy are Super Bowl champions, and we're having no conversations about Patrick Mahomes' GOAT status. Because
now we're bringing up like the LeBron thing. Is his record in NBA Finals or Patrick Mahomes' record in the Super Bowl. Now you at 2-2, it's a completely different conversation.
9062, is this rule for regular season or just postseason? Just postseason. Because at one point in my head last night, I was like, what happens when the clock runs out?
Yeah,
like,
in the regular,
like, and just in my brain, thankfully, like
I don't remember if it was Romo or Nance, but one of them did point it out as it got down to around 30, 40 seconds left in that first overtime period. It's like they pointed out the reason why the Chiefs aren't taking a timeout right now is because it'll just roll over into, I guess, the second quarter of overtime.
Yeah, they tried to make that very clear when they did the coin toss.
Yeah, in regulation, they would be taking timeouts because once it got to that end of that 10-minute period, then the game would be just a tie.
Yeah. I like the change. I will say in regards to that text, like, I know they talk about player safety and player safety matters and concussions and all that stuff. I get it. I do love the rule, like, first look at it. And I kind of wish this is one that they would adopt in the regular season. I know they won't because
I'm fine with ties in the regular season. I mean, I don't want ties, but I'm fine with ties if they've played a full 10-minute overtime.
Yeah, I don't know. I did enjoy it, and I would be curious.
It's great theater. I think that, practically, you don't want to see some game go, 100 minutes during the regular season, especially if it's a game that doesn't even matter towards the postseason.
Now, that's true, too. Like, I don't really need
like
to see,
some
like,
game between the Raiders and the Broncos in week 15. We don't need it to go 100 minutes in killing these guys for something that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, we didn't need to see another 10 minutes of Colts
last year. Yeah, exactly. Texans Colts from 2022 season.
Yeah, you're probably right in that point. I don't know. Maybe they can make like special exceptions. Like, hey, if this game is awesome, if this game is great and entertaining and has two good quarterbacks, we're going to play by the fun rules.
I'd love to hear the announcers like, okay, now we go out to referee Bill Vinovich, who will announce whether or not game is good enough.
You just draw a line. Be like, okay, if XY's, if these 10 quarterbacks are in the game, we're going to play with the fun overtime rules. If Davis Mills and whoever the Colts Aiden O'Connell are the quarterbacks, we're playing by the old rules and we're going to do a tie. Just completely shame them into sucking. All right, which team is the best set up for success in the future of the NFL? We know the short term, it's the Chiefs. It's probably still the 49ers. But over the next 3-4 years, when you look at them right now, what is your answer? We know the Chiefs are still going to be in the mix, but what is your answer and where do the Texans fit in? That's next here on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios, there is a bullpen, and in that bullpen is the brilliant mind of Joe George. Call him now and challenge him in a battle of wits.
Joe George here with you. Joe George here with you. I pushed the on button. It didn't even work.
No, I was trying to turn off the cue and I accidentally hit the on button.
Come on,
B-Mac. That was on me.
A car wreck of the day on this show, we'd nominate you.
Yeah, I'd be nominated.
I will say this, like, just last night, like, once again, like, it was a very good game. But I saw this, going around earlier, and we ended up talking about it on the Killer Bees today. Pro Football Focus put out this tweet, which team is best set up for the future? And there's a bunch of different ways, like, you can, I guess, interpret this, because they don't have the Kansas City Chiefs on here. They don't have the San Francisco 49ers on here. I think it's hard to argue that either of those teams would not still be in your top five. So it almost views it as, I guess it's almost like teams that miss the playoffs that are best set up for success. They have the Texans number one. To me, it's the easiest and most correct answer, even though the Texans have, you know, 35 free agents this offseason, I think it is. Yes, they have like $72 million in cap space. That number keeps changing depending on where you look at it. They have a ton of cap space, but there's so many roster spots to fill. But you still have all your draft capital. You still have a superstar quarterback in the making. You have two good wide receivers, both under rookie contracts. You have your offensive line pretty set up. I mean, your left tackle and your right tackle are secure. Some people are starting to mock drafts. I'm starting to see them put tackle for the Texans at 23, which I think is kind of giving off the assumption that either the Texans are unhappy with Titus Howard or that maybe that he could be more of a fixture.
Yeah, I saw Brandon, left guard. I saw Chad Branham quote tweet a guy who was talking about how they're going to need a replacement for George Fant. Like, well, I'm pretty sure that's going to be Titus Howard.
Yeah,
Titus Howard's only playing left guard because they had no options.
I kind of lean that way too, but like, depending on how the draft falls, I wonder if that could change their strategy.
I could see it being
a high-paid left guard, though.
Like, as they're putting up their draft strategy, I could see it being like, okay, we want to take an offensive lineman. If the offensive tackle's the best guy there, we'll take him, and we'll move Howard, you know, Titus to left guard. If the guard's there, then Titus Howard goes back to right tackle.
Yeah, and I think it's almost
I can see that being up in the air for them, but I would expect it to be Titus Howard or right tackle.
Yeah, I would anticipate it's more what Tennessee went through last year, where, you know, they got on the board. I think they drafted Peter Skoronski from Northwestern.
Yeah.
He's a tackle in college. He's a very good tackle, but, like, arm length, blah, blah, blah. They decided he's most likely going to be a better guard in the NFL. So I feel like that's more likely what you would see. Also, as you would see the Texans take a tackle at 23, but really the intention is, and Nick Cassiera will probably tell us on draft night if that happens, that this player will end up being the left guard for the Texans. But they have the Texans number one, best set up for the future. Number two is Washington. I think this list is trash.
The list is good at one. Then the rest of the list is crap.
Yeah. Washington's at two. They have cap space.
They have the second overall pick.
And they have cap space, and that's it. The Tennessee Titans are number three. Okay. The Indianapolis Colts are number four. The Cincinnati Bengals are number five.
Yeah, like, basically, to me, the way to fix this list is you move... Actually, I would put the Texans at two. I would just move the Bengals up to one, have the Texans at two, Colts at three, and then four and five we could talk about. But certainly, there's no... How in the world could you put Washington... Okay, great, they have the second overall pick. Great, they have salary cap. What are they going to try to do with that? They're going to try to find a quarterback. The Bengals already have an MVP-caliber quarterback. There's no way the Bengals could be any lower than two.
Yeah, so like if we're removing, the playoff teams from this equation, which is I'm guessing they got to this list.
I mean, I guess, but Texans are on there. They were in the playoffs.
That's a good point.
I mean, I'm
an idiot, Brian McDonald. I'm such a moron. Of course the Texans were in the playoffs. Then how are the Chiefs not on this list?
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
And honestly...
I guess you could say from the aspect of maybe teams viewed as up-and-comers or not there yet.
I guess, but like Will but Levis...
But the Bengals would be... I mean, the Bengals are there. They were just hurt.
Okay.
I don't get this list.
Washington has a total of $83 million in cap space.
Who cares?
That's quite a bit. Now, what if I told you there was a team that had $79 million in cap space going into 2024? They acquired a franchise pass rusher from Washington, gave him $20 million. So I guess they had $69 million. Nice. The Bears have $49 million in cap space.
It always comes back to the Bears.
But I'm just saying, how do the Bears have, yes, less cap space, but they have a franchise pass rusher, something Washington traded two away of. They have the number one pick in the draft. They have a wide receiver who, to me, I don't know, B-Mac, you tell me.
He's what's the top 20 wide
what's
receiver.
What's the difference between Scary Terry and DJ Moore?
Not a lot.
I don't think it's much.
No, I think, I mean, obviously, DJ's put up better numbers because, I mean, Terry's quarterback situation has been one of the worst in the league.
And Justin Fields is so good.
Look, I'm not saying the Bears quarterback situation is good, but
like, That's why I don't like this list.
They're equal wide receivers. I agree with
that. But like, that's why I don't like this list. Because like, how is Washington on there with Dan Quinn as their head coach, who gets no blame? I brought this up like 100 times now, it feels like, in the last 2 shows I've done. He gets no blame for the Atlanta Falcons.
For 28-3?
Yeah.
I mean,
he's the head coach, Brian.
But he's not the offensive play caller.
I know, but at some
point, you're right.
He should
have been in Kyle Shanahan's ear and said, run the damn ball.
If Bobby Slowick ever starts to pull Kyle Shanahan and D'Amico Ryans does not smack him in the face and start saying, run the damn ball, then I have a problem with D'Amico Ryans. But I'm just saying, like, how is this list here? The Detroit Lions, Brian, they have $48 million in cap space. They have two players that were like top five in rookie of the year on offense, two players who are very good on defense.
They have a franchise pass rusher like you brought up with the Bears.
Franchise pass rusher. They still have Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's the best wide receiver of any team with cap space besides the Bengals. And like, how are they not on this list? I guess it's Goff.
Yeah, because Goff, I guess it's his contract situation because he has, what, one, maybe two seasons left?
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see how much money he makes.
Yeah, I am too, but I mean... But there again, like I just don't see how you could say, because I mean, without question, to me, what sets teams up for the future, which is the whole point of this list from Gordon McGinnis from Pro Football Focus,
who is this?
It's quarterbacking and head coach, right?
Yeah,
and as you said, you know, I mean, Goff is certainly not, you know, a world beater, but he's better than Will Levis. He's proven more than Anthony Richardson. So, and Dan Campbell's obviously proven to be a very good coach. And say, I mean, again, I'll go back to the Bengals. If this was only viewed as up and coming teams, then sure, leave the Bengals off. But by including them at number five, you're obviously not making that the prerequisite to be on this list.
Yeah.
So there's no case where you could say, okay, if the Bengals were offered the number two or Joe Burrow for the number two overall pick, would they make that trade? Of course they would. So the Joe Burrow needs to be higher on this list because the only reason you're putting Washington above them is the number two pick.
The only argument I think for anti-Cincinnati is, look, they have $61 million in cap space right now.
I mean, you probably lose T. Higgins, but
I feel like they're going to franchise him, so they're at least going to have him for one more year. But you have Higgins, and then you have Boyd, who are both free agents this offseason.
Right.
Joe Mixon is old, but I like Chase Brown. DJ Reader is a free agent this offseason. So, like, they do have pieces that they have to replace, but they have Joe Burrow.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
to me,
what did we just talk about in segment one? Patrick Mahomes found a way to win the Super Bowl throwing touchdown passes to McCole Hardman and MVS. I mean, I'm not saying Joe Burrow is Patrick Mahomes, but he's probably, I think, to most people's eyes, including mine, the second best quarterback in the league.
He's the only quarterback that, like, before the season, I picked the Bengals to go to the Super Bowl, and the only reason why I did
that. Kansas City and beat Patrick Mahomes.
It's because it's Joe Burrow. Like, to me, like, that's why, if I was building this list, I think Bengals are number one. I think the reason why they're number one is because they have Burrow. Like, even though I think CJ could make an argument in a year or two.
Sure. And I would have the Texans second, but the Bengals could be one.
But, like, part of that is, like, as much as I love Tank Dell and as much as I love Nico Collins, they are not Jamar Chase.
No.
So, like, that to me is why, like, cap space stuff, all of it's kind of similar. So, based off this list, like, I would go Bengals, and then I would go Texans, and then I don't know what the parameters were. I would probably go.
Of these five teams, the Colts would be the third one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking the Titans out and putting the Bears in this list.
The Titans roster is trash right now.
I struggle with the Colts because I want to love them, like, in terms of, like, what they're building and their coach. But I just don't think Anthony Richardson's going to be on the field enough.
Yeah, no.
That is the one red flag that would move the Colts. He played in one game this year. One full game. He got hurt every week.
Yeah.
Like, I love
what they built around him.
For sure.
So, the only reason to knock them down on this list is Anthony Richardson's injury concern. Yeah.
Or if they lose Pittman.
True.
So, like, that to me would be in there. I would not include New England, Tennessee in this list. I don't think Washington belongs on this list because I don't like the pieces that they have. Like, even, like, I like Dotson. And
I like their two receivers, and that's really it.
Yeah, I don't like their running backs, their offensive line. Most of their defense isn't that good. Like, I'm stunned that anyone would be willing to put Washington as a top five team in the NFL, and then Tennessee as teams that are best set up for future success. Like, blows my mind.
Like, here's the way, like, if I'm coming up with this list, the idea of, you know, who's best set up for the future, I would try to think of it as if I was an NFL head coach and all the jobs in the NFL were open, you know, which jobs am I taking? And, of course, obviously, if we're throwing – because obviously Mahomes should be up here. But if we're throwing out the Chiefs and the 49ers and the elite of the elite of the elite, I'm taking the jobs where C.J. Stroud and Joe Burrow are. I'm not taking the job where, you know, Will Levis and the number two overall pick are.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, and look, I know I'm biased, but, like, I'm also taking the team with the number one pick.
Sure.
Because
sure,
at least
yeah, over Washington,
at least
sure.
You have your choice of quarterback.
Yeah, like, specifically heads up against Washington. Yes, I would take Chicago yeah. over Washington.
Oh, what a bizarre list we stumbled upon. All right.
Did they just make the list?
Yeah, they'll definitely be back on Bad Take Boulevard on Thursday, for sure, along with C.J. Stroud again for the second week in a row, because he said Steph Curry would give Michael Jordan 30 every night. All right. What deal would you feel comfortable giving Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker? We discuss that next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now gently return you to the Veritex Community Bank Studios and the dulcet tunes of Joe George live in the bullpen.
Final segment of the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George, Brian McDonald here with you for about another 10 minutes. We'll be back tomorrow. Oh, no, we won't, because we have A&M at 5:30. We'll be back on Wednesday at 6 o'clock. I'll be with you tomorrow from 12 to 3 with Josh Beard on Connor and Beard and Love the Bees. After that, from 3 to 5:30 as well. All right, so final segment of the show. Earlier today, I believe it was from today or from the weekend, Dana Brown was on the MLB Network, and here he is talking about making an offer to one's Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker.
Bregman, of course, is a little bit more urgent because he's done at the end of this year. Tucker, you know, as you know, we have through 25. So, but at the end of the day, I think Tucker and Bregman, we're gonna make them an offer. You know, I mean, I don't have a timeline on it right now. It's just that, you know, at the end of the day, we're gonna make him some type of an offer, and we'll see where it goes from there. I mean, you know. Bregman's been outstanding here. I mean, it's elite defense at third base. I watched this guy play, and it's like if you hit a third base, you're out. And so he's been great for this franchise. You know, he's a really tough out. He battles his tail off. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's no timeline, but we'll make some type of an offer, and we got a little bit more time for Tucker.
I think that he obviously is spot on about the players themselves. I'm fascinated by Alex Bregman's contract because he'll be 29 during the season in which he is in his first year of his new contract. So, like, a 10-year contract for him puts him at almost 40 years old. And I can't imagine, Brian, if you're double-checking my work on my age, please let me know if I'm wrong.
Yeah, he's actually going to be turning 30 this season.
Oh, so he turns 30 this season?
Yeah, he's 29 in 326 days.
Oh, I was looking at, I'm thinking about Tucker.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I can't imagine paying him a contract to when he's 40 years old. Now, Manny Machado did just sign a deal last offseason that kept him to be under contract. I think he goes into free agency at age 41. Now, it is backloaded for the most part. Like, it's pretty an even salary. Rafael Devers, he signed a contract last year at 26 years old, keeps him under contract through 2033 when he'll be 36 when he hits free agency. So most of the time, these third basemen are, like, making $30 million a year, the highest paid ones. I'm sure Arenado's deal was, like, very similar to when he would hit free agency, but he's making around $30 million a year. And, like, but I can't imagine Bregman signing a 10-year deal right now. Because as much as we all love Alex Bregman, he's not Manny Machado.
Here's the thing, and we had this conversation on the bullpen on Saturday, that I think Alex Bregman 2018, 2019 absolutely deserved $30 million or more over a 10-year contract. The problem that we've had is 2020, 2021, first half of 2022, different portions of 2023 have been well below that level of pay, a player deserving that level of play. So, I mean, Alex Bregman at his peak, if you take him at 2018 and 2019 and for spurts of 2022 and spurts of 2023, he's absolutely a $30 million caliber player. But going into his age 30 season, why would you then expect him to suddenly become more consistent when he hasn't been that consistent since 2019?
I would not expect him to do that. Like, obviously. So,
like, if you could tell me he's 2019 Alex Bregman, sure. I mean, right now, Spotrac has his estimated market value is 9 years, $286 mm-hmm. million, working out to 31.7 per year. If you're telling me 2019, 2018, sign me up. Don't care. Write the check. I'd even go up to $300 million. But the problem is we haven't seen him be that player consistently in, you know, what, 3-4 seasons?
Yeah, and like and look, there will be a team that might do it. Like, it doesn't feel like
it.
It only takes one. Like, there might be one team that's going to overpay him. But you look at Cody Bellinger. Like, we talked about him earlier in terms of actually more of a comparison with Kyle Tucker. But that's kind of what I would view Bregman as. It's like this kind of roller coaster player. Now, Bellinger
bounced back big last year in Chicago.
He bounced back big. And, like, you know, it's funny. Jeremy was busting me a little bit on Friday about it. I have no explanation for this. I have nothing to base this on. Just gut feeling Alex Bregman will show out and show up in a contract year. He just feels like one of those guys to me. That, like, it's a contract year, cool. I'm going to hit 35 bombs. I'm going to have my best year since 2019. I'm not going to win an MVP, but I'm sure going to be top 10. And then I'm going to go get paid for a 10-year contract and leave the Houston Astros. Nothing to base it on. Just kind of a gut feeling of, like, how the season will go.
I'll back you on that gut feeling. I do think, I mean, obviously barring injury, but I do think Alex Bregman is going to have a big season.
Yeah, I would just be, if I'm the Astros, I think they'll make him a deal, but I don't think the deal will even be close enough to where he will ever entertain it.
No, yeah, exactly. Because what, I mean, digging into the language of what Dana Brown actually said, and maybe this is looking too deep, maybe this is finding something where there isn't, but the exact words Dana Brown used were, we'll make him some type of offer.
Yes.
That type of language doesn't tell me that we're committed to get this deal done. That's not the language you would use for Jose Altuve.
That's the language you use for Carlos Correa.
That's the language you use for George Springer. That's the language you use for the guys that have walked.
Yeah. Now Kyle Tucker, I think, is a little bit different. Like, I still think there's a chance they could try to come to terms with, like, a long term deal with them, with Kyle Tucker specifically. I don't think Bregman, there's any chance. I'm at like 2% chance.
Yeah, I would go. I mean, I would price his right to go higher than that, but it's not. I would probably cap it at 10%.
Yeah, so like, I don't think Bregman will be back. I think there's still. I have more hope that Tucker will get done. Now, I'm. He also probably wants a 10-year contract. Just the question I have is, like, if you're Jim Crane, like, you knew you had answers. You knew that when you let Springer go, you knew there was bad blood. You knew there was really not even a contract offered to Springer because, you know, he didn't want to be here anymore because he wanted to test free agency because of the way you treated him when he got called up. You knew that he was gone. But you also knew you had Kyle Tucker. Like, while you didn't have a center field, you had Kyle Tucker. You had a George Springer caliber player right there. Carlos Correa, he had major health issues. Like, we saw it play out with the Mets, the Giants, and then eventually having to go back to the Twins. And then the Astros clearly knew that stuff. And maybe they didn't think that Jeremy Peña was going to win World Series MVP and ALCS MVP, like in a gold glove in his rookie year. You knew you had something in there. You don't have an answer in center field right now. You don't have an answer in right field right now. Like, yeah, Jacob Melton, I hope he's good. But we don't even know if he'll be better than Jake Myers, let alone a suitable replacement for Kyle Tucker in 2 years. Like, yeah. You don't have the answers. You had answers for Gerrit Cole. You had to go to those answers way earlier than you expected, but you still had Verlander and Greinke and McCullers, and you still knew about Fromber and Javier and Luis Garcia and these guys that you were developing because they came on super, like, way earlier than a lot of us anticipated. But, like, there's no answer at third base, and there's no answer at right field. So that, to me, is where this situation, I would view it differently if I was Jim Crane.
I agree, because pre-Josh Hader signing, it was why I was so concerned about the Astros window closing, because it seemed like the Astros were still operating under the mindset of, we can just roll the roster over, call someone up from Sugar Land and keep right on going. But the problem is, And look, obviously these rankings, they're just an opinion. They're not the be-all, end-all. But when you look at most, you know, farm system rankings, I just looked at one from The Athletic a few days ago. They have the Astros farm system ranked 27th.
Yep.
You're not replacing Kyle Tucker-level production with the 27th-ranked farm system. You've kind of reached the end of just being able to call next man up from AAA and replace the star that walked out the door. You've kind of reached the end of that. So at some point, if you want this window to extend, and I've been given more faith they're willing to do so, you know, post or because of Josh Hader, they're going to have to sign some of these guys. They're going to have to change the philosophy. If they don't do so, I don't think the answer is there in AAA to fix things when guys walk out the door.
Yeah, it's just but I don't think Jim Crane will go like 10 years, and I think that's going
like,
to hinder
like
him.
Would you go Whit Merrifield? I mean, he was, I believe, 11 years, 288 or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know if Tucker would take that. It's under $30 million AAV, and I don't think Tucker's going to take under $30
million. I think Tucker will have a much easier time getting a massive contract than Alex Bregman will, because Bregman is a Boris guy, and there are teams that don't deal with Boris clients. Like, they don't do long-term deals. The Astros are not the only one that have those issues. All right, that does it for us here on The Bullpen. I'll be back tomorrow at 12 with Connor and Beard. Just be Beard. All right, see you.